but he nonetheless took pains with his appearance and knew that women fancied him. She had never seen him mad, but she knew he would not like anyone to make light of him. "I believe he'd shoot the man that touches me," she said.
"Well, I believe it, too," Lippy said. "Jake's mighty partial to Laurie."
"Hell, you're partial to her yourself," Gus said. "We're all partial to her. But Jake ain't exactly a killer."
"He killed a man in Arkansas," the ring said.
Augustus shrugged.
"He fired off a buffalo gun, and the bullet happened to hit a dentist," he said. "I don't call that no crime of passion."
Lorena didn't like it that Gus acted like Jake wasn't much. He had a reputation for being a cool man in the fight.
"He killed a bandit," Lippy said. "Hit him right in the Adam's apple, I heard."
"Truth of that is, the bandit rode into the bullet," Augustus said. "He was unlucky, like the dentist."
Lorena just sat. The situation was so unexpected that she could not think about it clearly. Of course, she had no intention of going upstairs with Gus, but he couldn't just be scared off with a look like some cowboy. Gus was not afraid of looks, or of Jake either, it seemed.
"I'll give you $50, Gus said with a big grin.
Lippy nearly fell off his stool. He had never seen or imagined anything so rash. $50 for one poke. Then it occurred to him that he would cheerfully give as much, if he had it, to get under Lorena's skirts. A man could always get more money, but there wasn't but one Lori. Not on the border, anyway.
"Hell, I would, too," he said, just to register the offer.
"I didn't know you was so rich," Augusta said, a little amused.
"Well, I ain't now, but I might be," Lippy said. "Business is picking up."
"Pshaw," Augusta said. "Once we start to drive, you'll be lucky to earn a nickel in a month."
Lorena decided her best out was to pretend to be frightened of Jake's vengeance, though now that she had thought about it, she knew Gus was probably right. She had met one or two men who were proven killers, and Jake didn't have their manner at all. "I won't do it," she said. "He'll kill us if he finds out."
"How would he find out?"
Gus asked. "Lippy might tell him," she said. Augustus looked at Lippy. It was true that the man was a dreadful gossip, and a gossip, moreover, who had scant materials to work with. It would not be easy for him to resist mentioning that he had heard a man offer $50 for a poke.
"I'll give you $10 to keep your mouth shut," Augustus said. "And if you betray me, I'll shoot another hole in your stomach."
"Give me the 10, Lippy said, his astonishment growing. That made $60 Gus would be spending.
He had never heard of anyone spending such an amount on their pleasure. But then, so far as he knew, there was no one anywhere like Gus, a man who seemed to care nothing for money. Gus handed over the money, and Lippy pocketed it. Knowing that he had struck a bargain, he'd better keep, at least until Gus died. Gus was no one to fool with. He had seen several men try, usually over card games, and most all of them had got whacked over the head with Gus's big gun. Gus didn't shoot unless he had to, but he was not loath to whack a man. Lorena felt her indignation growing. She was beginning to feel cornered, something she had not expected to have to feel again. Jake was supposed to have ended that, and yet he hadn't. Of course, he probably never suspected his own friend would make such a move behind his back, and yet it still seemed negligent of him, for he knew Gus's ways. "You can pay him if you want, but I ain't going," she said. "Jake's my sweetheart."
"Well, I ain't trying to cut him out," Augusta said. "I just want a poke."
Lorena felt her silence coming back. It was the only way to deal with such a situation. She sat for a few minutes, not talking, hoping he would go away. But it didn't work. He just sat and drank, perfectly friendly and in no hurry. Once she thought about it, the sum grew on her a little bit. It was something to be offered $50. She would have thought it crazy in anyone except Gus, but Gus was clearly not crazy. In a way, it was a big compliment that he would offer her $50 just for that. Go get a Mexican woman, she said. Why waste your money?
Because you're my preference,
Augusta said.
I'll tell you what. Let's cut the cards. If you're high, I'll give you the money and forget to poke. If I'm high, I'll give you the money and you give me the poke.
Lorena thought she might as well. After all, it was just gambling, which was what Jake did. If she won, it would all seem like a joke, something that Gus had cooked up to pass the time. Besides, she would have $50 and could send to San Antonio for some new dresses, so Jake wouldn't be so critical of her wardrobe. She could tell him that she beat Gus to the tune of $50, which would astonish him, since he played with Gus all the time and seldom won more than a few dollars. Then, in a second, Gus beat her. She came up with the ten of spades and him with the queen of hearts. It was her sense that he'd cheated, though she couldn't have said how. She had not realized before what a determined man he was. He had come in for a purpose, and she had not been clever enough to head him off. He paid her the $50 at once. It had not been a bluff. When he had had the poke and was dressing, she found that she felt pretty cheerful and was not in the mood to hurry him out. After all, Gus had paid her many visits and given her nothing to hold against him. The $50 was flattering, and she rather liked it that she was his preference, even though he was Jake's best friend. She had stopped feeling silent and was content to let him loll for a few minutes.
"Well, do you and Jake aim to marry?" he asked, looking at her cheerfully.
"He ain't mentioned it," she said. "He's taking me to San Francisco, though," Augusta snorted.
"Yeah, I figured that was his game," he said.
"Well, he promised," Loring said. "I mean to hold him to it, Gus."
"You'll need my help, then," Augusta said. "Jake is a slippery eel, and the only way to keep him around is to chain him to a wagon."
"I can keep him around," Lorena said confidently.
"Oh, he fancies you. But that don't mean he'll stay around. My guess is he'll use the drive as an excuse when the time comes."
"If he goes with it, then I'm going too," she said.
"Why, Laura, you're welcome as far as I'm concerned. The problem is Carl. See, he ain't very tolerant of women."
That was no news. Captain Carl was one of the few men in the region who had never been to visit her. In fact, so far as she could remember, he had never been in the saloon. "It's a free country, ain't it?" she said. "I guess I can go where I want." Gus got off the bed and tucked his carrot back in his pants.
"It's not very free if you happen to work for Carl," he said.
"You think Lippy will tell on us?" she asked. To her surprise, she felt no guilt at all about operating behind Jake's back. So far as she was concerned, she was still a sweetheart. It had happened only because Gus had been too quick for her in a card game. It didn't affect the situation one way or another.
"He won't tell," Augusta said. "Lippy's got more sense than you might think. What he figures is that if he keeps quiet, he might make another $10 sometime, which is right. He might."
"Well, not unless we play a hand," Lorena said. "I don't trust your cut." Augustus grinned.
"A man who wouldn't cheat for a poke don't want one bad enough," he said as he took his hat.
Chapter 18.
Augustus rode back to camp a little after sunset, thinking the work would have stopped by then. The cattle were being held in a long valley near the river, some 5 miles from town. Every night, Carl went across the river with 5 or 6 hands and came back with 200 or 300 Mexican cattle, longhorns mostly, skinny as rail and wild as deer. Whatever they got, they branded the next day with the part of the crew that had rested during the hard end of the work. Only Carl worked both shifts. If he slept, it was an hour or two before breakfast or after supper. The rest of the time he worked, and so far as anyone could tell, the pace agreed with him. He had taken to riding the hell bitch 2 days out of 3, and the mare seemed no more affected by the work than he was. Bolivar had not taken kindly to being moved to a straggly camp out in the brush, with no dinner bell to whack or crowbar to whack it with. He kept his 10-gauge near the chuck box and scowled at everybody. The Irishmen were so intimidated that they were always the last ones in line. As a consequence, they got little to eat and were no longer as fat as they had been the day they arrived. It seemed the Irishmen were a part of the outfit, though. Their total inexperience was offset by an energy and a will to learn that impressed even Call. He let him stay in the first place because he was so short-handed he couldn't afford to turn away any willing hand. By the time more competent men arrived, the Irishmen had gotten over their fear of horses and worked with a will. Not being cowboys, they had no prejudice against working on the ground. Once shown the proper way to throw a roped animal, they cheerfully flung themselves on whatever the ropers drug up to the branding fire, even if it was a 2-year-old bull with lots of horn and a mean disposition. They had no great finesse, but they were dogged and would eventually get the creature down. This willingness to work on the ground was indispensable, for most cowboys would rather eat poison than be forced to dismount. They all fancied themselves ropers and swelled like toads if asked to do work they considered beneath their dignity. Since there were few goats to steal near camp, Bowles' menus relied heavily on beef, with the usual admixture of beans. He had brought along a sack of chilies, and he dumped them liberally into his beans, feeling free to augment the dish with pieces of whatever varmint strayed into his path, rattlesnakes mostly, with an occasional armadillo. For several days, the crew ate the fiery beans without complaint, only the Irishman showing pronounced ill effects. Young Sean had difficulty with the peppers. He could not eat the beans without weeping, but with all the work, his appetite raged to such a point that he could not avoid the beans. He ate them and wept. Most of the crew liked the boy and had decided to treat his frequent weepings as a simple mild aberration, related in some way to his nationality. Then one day Jasper Fant caught Bolivar skinning a rattlesnake. He assumed Bolivar was merely going to make himself a rattlesnake belt, but he happened to turn around as Bowl sliced the snake right into the stew pot, a sight which agitated him greatly. He had heard that people ate snake, but had never expected to do so himself. When he told the other hands what he had seen, they were so aroused that they wanted to hang Bolivar on the spot, or at least rope him and drag him through the prickly pear to improve his manners. But when they approached Augustus with the information about the snake, he laughed at him.
"You boys must have been raised on satin pillows," he said. "If you'd rangered, you'd have got a taste for snake long ago."
He then proceeded to give them a lecture on the culinary properties of rattlesnake, a lecture that Jasper, for one, received rather stiffly. It might be superior to chicken, rabbit, and possum, as Gus claimed, but that didn't mean he wanted to eat it. His visits to the stew pot became a source of irritation to everyone. He would fish around in the pot for several minutes, seeking portions of meat that he could feel confident that hadn't come from a snake. Such delicacy exasperated the rest of the crew, who were usually so hungry by supper time that they could ill abide waits. Call and Jake rode in while Augustus was eating. The sight of Gus with his plate full put Jake in a low temper, since he himself had handled branding irons all day while Gus had amused himself in town and stayed fresh. They had branded over 400 cattle since sunup, enough to make Jake wish that he had never brought up the notion of taking cattle to Montana.
"Hello, girls," Augustus said. "You look like you've done a heavy laundry. Wait till I finish my beef, and I'll help you off your horses."
"I don't want off mine," Jake said. "Hand me a plate, and I'll eat on my way to town." Call felt irritated. It was the first full day Jake had put in since the work started, and mostly he had lazed through it. "Why must you go?" he asked, trying to keep it mild. "We're going to make our last drag tonight. We have to get started, you know." Jake dismounted and walked over to the grub, pretending he hadn't heard. He didn't want an argument with Call if he could avoid one. In truth, he had not been thinking very far ahead since drifting back to Lonesome Dove. He had often thought of the fortune that could be made in cattle in Montana, but then a man could think of a fortune without actually having to go and make one.
The only good thing to be said for trailing cattle that far north was that it beat hanging in Arkansas or rotting in some jail. Then there was Lori. So far, she hadn't had a single fit, but that didn't mean she wouldn't if she found out he was leaving. On the other hand, he couldn't very well take her. No one in his memory had ever tried to bring a woman into one of Call's camps. It was all vexing, having decisions to make and yet having no time to think them through. He got himself a hunk of beef and some of the old Mexican's peppery stew and went back to where Call and Gus were sitting. He felt distinctly irritated with Call. The man never seemed to need any of the things other humans needed, like sleep or women. Life for Call was work, and he seemed to think everyone else ought to see it the same way.
"Why, Jake, you look plumb grumpy," Augusta said when Jake sat down and began to eat. "Honest work don't agree with you, I guess."
"No, I'm about as cooked as this beef," Jake said. Newt and the two Irishmen were holding the herd. The Irishmen were particularly good night herders because they could sing. Their melodies seemed to soothe the cattle. In fact, the whole camp enjoyed the Irish singing. Newt couldn't sing a lick, but he had rapidly developed into such a skilled cowhand that Call felt a little guilty for having held him back for so long.
"I'm sure partial to the evening," Augusta said. "Evening and the morning. If we just didn't have to have the rest of the darn day, I'd be a lot happier."
"If we have a good drag tonight, we can start north on Monday," Call said. "How's that suit you, Jake?" "Oh, fine," Jake said. "But you boys don't have to try and suit me with your drive. I've been thinking of spending some time in San Antonio."
"That's a big disappointment," Augusta said. "It's a long way to Montana, and I was counting on you to keep up the conversation."
"Well, count again," Jake said, deciding on the spot that he wouldn't go. Call knew there was no point in reminding Jake that the whole drive had been his idea. The man was willful as a child in some respects. Show him what he ought to do, and he would dig in his heels and refuse. It was particularly irritating in this instance, because nobody in the outfit had ever been further north in Kansas. Jake knew the country and could be a big help. "Jake, we wish you'd come," he said. "We were relying on you to help us choose the route."
"No, Jake don't like to help his compañeros," Augusta said. "He's got his own fancies to cultivate. The fact that he caused all this don't mean a thing to him."
"Did I cause it?" Jake asked, trying to keep the talk light.
"Of course you caused it," Augusta said. "Who was it said Montana's a cowman's paradise?"
"Well, it is," Jake said.
"Then you should have picked a cattleman to mention it to. Not two old laws like us."
"Hell, you're cattlemen now," Jake said. "All it takes is cows."
"Are you aiming to marry Lori?"
Augustus asked, changing his tack. "Marry her?" Jake asked, astonished. "Why would I marry her?"
"Well, you could do worse," Augustus said. "An old scamp like you's apt to break down any time. It would be nice to have a young woman to rub your back and bring you soup."
"I ain't near as old as you," Jake reminded him. "Why don't you marry her?" It was talk he didn't care to hear. Swift Bill Spettle had let a horse kick him that morning, had a knot on his forehead as big as a goose egg. "You best let Bull rub some ointment on that bump," Call suggested. The Spettle boys were mighty green, but they were not afraid to work. Call got up and went to get his supper. As soon as he left, Augustus stretched his legs and grinned at Jake.
"I played a hand with Lori this afternoon," he said. "I believe you've made her restless, Jake."
"How's that?"
"He does seem to be looking forward to San Francisco," Augusta said.
Jake felt himself getting more and more peevish. Lorena should have known better than to play cards with Gus, or even talk to him, though she could hardly be blamed for listening. It was well known that Gus would talk to a stump if he couldn't find a human.
"I doubt she'll want to spend no time in San Antonio," Augusta said. That's where she was before she came here. And women don't like to go backwards. Most women will never back up an inch in their whole lives.
I can't see that it's any of your affair what we do, Jake said. I guess she'd go to San Antonio if I say to. If she don't, she'll just get left.
Bring her on the drive, Augusta said. She might like Montana. And if she gets tired of looking at the ass end of these cows, you could always stop in Denver.
It was something. The talent Gus had for saying the very thing that a man might have been half-thinking. Jake had more than once considered Denver, regretted more than once he hadn't stopped there instead of going to Fort Smith. Going along with a drive would be a good enough way to get back to Denver. Of course, that didn't settle the question of Laurie, exactly.
You know as well as I do, Carl would never allow no woman in his camp, he said. It was surprising that Gus would even suggest such a thing.
Carl ain't God. He don't have to get his way every day of the month. If she was my sweetheart, I'd bring her. And if he didn't like it, he could just bite himself.
You couldn't afford her, Gus. No better card player than you are, Jake said, standing up. I believe I'll go to town. I don't feel like bumping around Mexico tonight. Without another word, he got on his horse and left. Carl watched him go and walked back over to Gus.
You think he'll come with us on the drive? He asked. Not unless you let him bring his girl, Augusta said.
Why, is Jake that crazy? Carl asked. Does he want to bring that girl?
It never occurred to him, but it has now, Augusta said. I invited her.
Carl was impatient to get off, but Gus's remark stopped him. Gus was never one to do the usual, but this was stretching things, even for him.
You done what? Told him he ought to bring Laurie along, Augusta said. She'd improve the company.
I won't have it, Carl said at once. God damn you, you know better than that.
Ain't you late for work? Augusta asked. I can't enjoy the night for all this jabbering.
Carl decided it was some joke. Even Gus wouldn't go that far. I'm going, he said. You watch this end. Augustus lay back, his head against his saddle. It was a clear night, the stars just beginning to appear. Needle, Bert, P, Dietz, Dish were waiting to go to Mexico. The rest of the boys were holding the herd. Bowl was peeing on the campfire, causing it to sputter. Call turned his horse and rode toward the river.
Chapter 19.
Newt's mind had begun to dwell on the north for long stretches, particularly at night when he had had nothing to do but ride slowly around and around the herd, listening to the small noises the bedded cattle made, or the sad singing of the Irishman. He thought of the north, trying to imagine what it must be like. He had grown up with the sun shining, with mesquite and chaparral, armadillos and coyotes, Mexicans and the shallow Rio Grande. Only once had he been to a city, San Antonio. Dietz had taken him on one of his banking trips, and Newt had been in a daze from all there was to see. Once, too, he had gone with Dietz and P to deliver a small bunch of horses to Matagorda Bay, and had seen the great gray ocean. Then, too, he had felt dazed, staring at the world of water. But even the sight of the ocean had not stirred him so much as the thought of the north. All his life he had heard talk of the plains that had no end, and of the Indians and buffalo and all the creatures that lived on them. Mr. Gus had even talked of great bears so thick that bullets couldn't kill them, and deer-like creatures called elk twice the size of ordinary deer. Now, in only a few days, he would be going north, a prospect so exciting that for hours at a stretch he was taken away from himself into imaginings. He continued to do his normal work, although his mind wasn't really on it. He could imagine himself and Mouse out in a sea of grass chasing buffalo. He could scare himself to the point where his breath came short, just imagining the great thick bears. Before the Irishman had been there a week, he had made friends with Sean O'Brien.
At first, the conversation was one-sided, for Sean was full of worries and prone to talking a blue streak once he found that Newt would listen and not make fun of him. The talk gushed out, most of it homesick talk. He missed his dead mother and said over and over again that he would not have left Ireland if she hadn't died. He would cry immediately at the thought of his mother, and when Newt revealed that his mother was also dead, the friendship became closer. "Did you have a paw?" Newt asked one day as they were resting by the river after a stretch of brandy. "Yeah, I had one, the bastard," Sean said grimly. "He only came home when he was a mind to beat us." "Why would he beat you?" Newt asked. "He liked to," Sean said. "He was a bastard, Paw. He beat Ma and all of us whenever he could catch us. We laid for him once and was gonna brain him with a shovel, but he was a lucky one. The night was dark and we never seen him." "Well, what happened to him?" Newt asked.
"Ha! The drunkard," Sean said.
"He fell down a well and drowned. Saved us killing him and going to jail, I guess."
Newt had always missed having a father, but the fact that Sean spoke so coldly of his put the matter in a different light. Perhaps he was not so unlucky after all. He was riding around the herd when Jake Spoon trotted past on his way to Lonesome Dove.
"Going to town, Jake?" Newt asked.
"Yes, I think I will," Jake said. He didn't stop to pass the time. In a second, he was out of sight in the shadows. It made Newt's spirits fall a little, for Jake had seldom said two words to him since he came back. Newt had to admit that Jake was not much interested in him, or the rest of them either. He gave the impression of not exactly liking anything around the Hat Creek outfit. Listening to the talk around the campfire at night, Newt learned that cowboys were unanimously hostile to Jake for fixing it so Lorena was no longer a whore. Dish, he knew, was particularly riled, though Dish never said much when the other boys were talking about it.
"Hell," Needle said.
"There never was but one thing worth doing on this border. Now a man can't even do that."
"A man can do it plenty over in Mexico," Bert observed. "Cheaper, too."
"That's what I like about you, Bert," Augusta said,
as he whittled a mesquite twig into a toothpick.
"You're a practical man."
"No, he just likes them brown whores," Needle said.
Needle kept a solemn look on his face at all times, seldom varying his expression.
"Guess I've heard it said that you had a fancy for that woman yourself," Jasper Fant said.
"I wouldn't have suspected it in a man as old as you."
"What would you know about anything, Jasper?" Augustus asked. "Age don't slow a man's whoring. It's a lack of income that does that." "No more prosperous than you look, I wouldn't think you'd know much about it."
"We oughtn't to talk this way around these young boys," Bert said. "I doubt one of them's even had a poke, unless it was Milk Cow." A general laugh went up.
"These young'uns will have to wait until we get to Ogallala," Augusta said. "I've heard it's the Sodom of the Plains."
"If it's worse than Fort Worth, I can't wait to get there," Jasper said. "I've heard there's whores you can marry for a week if you stay in town that long."
"It won't matter how long we stay," Augusta said. "I'll have skinned all you boys a several years' wages before we get that far. I'd skin you out of a month or two tonight if somebody'd break out the cards."
That was all it took to get a game started. Apart from telling stories and speculating about whores, it seemed to Newt the cowboys would rather play cards than anything. Every night, if there was many as four who weren't working, they'd spread a saddle blanket near the campfire and play for hours, mostly using their future wages as money. Already the debts which existed were so complicated that it gave Newt a headache to think about them. Jasper Fant had lost his saddle to Dish Boget, only Dish was letting him keep it and use it. "A man dumb enough to bet his saddle is dumb enough to eat gourds," Mr. Gus had said when he heard about that bet.
"I have et okra," Jasper replied, "but I have never yet et no gourd."
So far, neither Newt nor the Rainey or Spettle boys had been allowed to play. The men felt it would be little short of criminal to bankrupt young men at the outset of their careers. But sometimes, when nobody was using the deck, Newt borrowed it and he and the others played among themselves. Sean O'Brien joined in. They usually played for pebbles, since none of them had any money. Talking to Sean had made Newt curious about Ireland. Sean said the grass was thick as a carpet there. The description didn't help much, for Newt had never seen a carpet. The Hat Creek outfit possessed no rugs of any kind, or anything that was green. Newt had a hard time imagining how a whole country would be covered with green grass. "What do you do in Ireland?" he asked. "Mostly dig spuds," Sean said. "But aren't there horses and cows?" Newt asked. Sean thought for a moment, but could only remember about a dozen cows in the vicinity of his village, which was near the sea. He had slept beside their own milk cow on many a cold night, but he figured if he tried to lie down beside one of the animals they called cows in America, a cow would be 50 miles away before he got to sleep. "There are cows," he said, "but you don't find them in bunches. There'd be no place to put them." "What do you do with all the grass, then?" Newt asked. "Why, nothing," Sean said. "It just grows." The next morning, while helping Dietz and Pee build the branding fires, Newt mentioned that Sean said he brought his milk cow into the house and slept with her. Dietz had a good laugh at the thought of a cow in a house. Pee stopped work for about 10 minutes while he thought the matter over. Pee never liked to give his opinion too quickly. "Well, it wouldn't work around the cap'n," he said finally, that being his opinion. "How long do you think it'll take us to get up north?" Newt asked Dietz, the acknowledged expert on times and distances. Though he had laughed about the cow in the house, Dietz had not been his usual cheerful self for the last few days. He felt a change coming. They were leaving Lonesome Dove, where the life had been quiet and steady, and Dietz could not understand the reason for it. A captain was not prone to rash moves, and yet it seemed rash to Dietz to just pick up and go north. Usually, when he thought about the captain's decisions, he agreed with him, but this time he couldn't. He was going, but he felt uneasy in his mind. He remembered one thing the captain had drilled into them many times during the rangering years, that a good start made for a good campaign. Now it seemed to him that the captain had forgotten his own rule. Jake Spoon came home one day, and the next day the captain was ready to go, with a crew that was just a patched-together bunch, a lot of wild cattle, and horses, most of which were only half broke. Besides that, it was nearly April, late to be starting out to go so far. He had been on the plains in summer and seen how quickly the water holes dried up. Dietz felt a foreboding, a sense that they were starting out on a hard journey to a far place. And now there was the boy, too excited about the prospect to keep his mind on the work. "Chop them sticks," Dietz said. "Don't be worrying about the time. It'll be fall. I expect before we get there." Dietz watched the boy, hoping he wouldn't chop his foot off cutting the wood. He knew how to handle an axe, but he was forgetful once he got his mind on something. He didn't stop working, he just worked absently, thinking about something else. They were friends, though, he and Newt. The boy was young and had all his hopes, while Dietz was older and had fewer. Newt sometimes asked so many questions that Dietz had to laugh. He was like a cistern, from which questions flowed instead of water. Some Dietz answered, and some he didn't. He didn't tell him that even when life seemed easy, it kept on getting harder. Dietz liked his work, liked being part of the outfit and having his name on the sign, yet he often felt sad. His main happiness consisted of sitting with his back against the water tank at night, watching the sky and the changing moon. He had known several men who blew their heads off, and he had pondered it much. It seemed to him it was probably because they could not take enough happiness just from the sky and the moon to carry them over the low feelings that came to all men. Those feelings hadn't come to the boy yet. He was a good boy, as gentle as the gray doves that came to peck the gravel on the flats behind the barn. He would try to do any task that was asked of him. and if he worried over much, it was that he wasn't good enough at his work to please the captain. But then the whole outfit worried about that, all at least except for Mr. Gus. Dietz himself had fallen short a few times over the years and had felt the captain's displeasure afflict him like a bruise. "Ah, Swan," P said. "Jake slipped off again. He sure don't take to Brandon." "Mr. Jake, he don't take to work," Dietz said with a chuckle. "It don't have to be Brandon." Newt went on chopping wood, a little bothered by the fact that Jake had such a bad reputation with the men. They all considered him to be a man who shirked his duties. Mr. Gus worked even less, and nobody seemed to feel that way about him. It was puzzling, and to Newt's mind, unfair. Jake had just returned. Once he got rested, perhaps he would be more interested in work. While he was puzzling about it, he took a bad swing with the axe, and a piece of mesquite he was trying to split flew right up and almost hit Dietz in the head. It would have, except that Dietz had evidently been expecting just such an accident. He quickly ducked. Newt was embarrassed. At the moment he had made his slip, his mind had drifted to Lorena. He was wondering what spending a day with her would actually be like. Would they just sit in the saloon playing cards, or what? Since he had not spoken to her, it was hard for him to know what the two of them could do for a whole day, but he liked to think about it. Dietz didn't say a word or even look at Newt accusingly, but Newt was still mortified. There were times when Dietz seemed almost to be able to read his mind. What would he think if he knew that he had been thinking about Lorena? After that, he reminded himself that Lorena was Jake's woman and tried to pay better attention to splitting the tough wood.
Chapter 20.
The minute Jake stepped in the door of the Dry Bean, Lorena saw that he was in a sulk. He went right over to the bar and got a bottle and two glasses. He was sitting at a table, piddling with a deck of cards. It was early in the evening, and no one was around. Usually three or four of the Hat Creek cowboys would be there by that time. Lorena watched Jake closely for a few minutes to see if she was the cause of his sulk. After all, she had sold Gus the poke that very afternoon. It was not impossible that Jake had found out some way. She was not one who expected to get away with much in life. If you did a thing hoping a certain person wouldn't find out, that person always did. When Gus tricked her and she gave him the poke, she was confident that the matter would get back to Jake eventually. Lippy was only human, and things that happened to her got told and repeated. She didn't exactly want Jake to know, but she wasn't afraid of him either. He might hit her, or he might shoot Gus. She found she couldn't easily predict him, which was one of the reasons she didn't care if he found out. After that, she would know him a lot better, whatever he did. But when he sat down at the table and set a glass in front of her, she soon realized it was not her who had put the tight look in his face. She saw nothing unfriendly in his eyes. She took a sip or two of whiskey, and about that time Lippy came over and sat down at the table with him as if he'd been invited. "Well, you've come in by yourself, I see," Lippy said, pushing his dirty bowler back off his wrinkled forehead. "I did. By God, I intend to be by myself," Jake said irritably. He got up and, without another word, took his bottle and glass and headed for the stairs. It put her out of sorts with Lippy, for it was still hot in her room, and she would rather have stayed in the saloon, where there was at least a breath of breeze. But with Jake so out of sorts, there was nothing to do but go upstairs. She gave Lippy a cool look as she got up, which surprised him so it made his lip drop. "Why are you looking at me that way?" he asked. "I never told on you." Lorena didn't answer. A look was better than words where Lippy was concerned. Then the very minute she got in the room, Jake decided he wanted a poke, and in a hurry. He had drunk a half a glass of whiskey while he was climbing the stairs, and a big shot of whiskey nearly always made him want it. He was dusty as could be from a day with the cattle, and would usually have waited for a bath, or at least washed the grit off his face and hands in the wash basin. But this time he didn't wait. He even tried to kiss her with his hat on, which didn't work at all. His hat was as dusty as the rest of him. The dust got in her nose and made her sneeze. His haste was unusual. He was a picky man, apt to complain if the sheets weren't clean enough to suit him. But this time he didn't seem to notice that the dust was sifting out of his clothes onto the floor. When he opened his pants and pulled his shirt tail out, a trickle of sand came with it. The night was stifling, and Jake so sandy that by the time he got through, there was so much dirt in the bed that they might as well have been wallowing around on the ground. There were little lines of mud on her belly where the sweat had caked the dust. She didn't resent it particularly. It was better than smoke pots and mosquitoes. It was only when Jake sat up to reach for his whiskey bottle that he noticed the dust. "Darn, I'm sandy," he said. "I should have bathed in the river." He sighed and poured himself a whiskey and sat with his back against the wall, idly running a hand up and down her leg. Lorena waited, taking a sip or two of whiskey. Jake looked tired. "Well, these boys," he said, "they are aggravating devils." "Which boys?" she asked. "Carl and Gus," he said. "Just because I mentioned Montana to them, they expect me to help them drive them darn cattle up there." Lorena watched him. He looked out the window and wouldn't meet her eye. "I'll be damned if I'll do it," he said. "I ain't no cowpuncher. Carl just got it in his head to go for some reason. Well, let him go." But she knew that bucking Gus and the captain was no easy thing for Jake. He looked at her finally, a sadness in his eyes, as if he was asking her to think of a way to help him. Then he grinned. His little, smart, lazy grin. "Gus thinks we ought to marry," he said. "I'd rather go to San Francisco," Lorena said. Jake stroked her leg again. "Well, we will," he said. "But don't Gus come up with some notions. He thinks I ought to bring you on the drive." Then he looked at her again as if trying to fathom what was in her thoughts. Lorena let him look. Tired as he was, with his shirt open, there seemed nothing in the man to fear. It was hard to know what he himself feared. He was proud as a turkey cock around other men, irritable and quick to pass an insult. Sitting on her bed, with his clothes unbuttoned, he seemed anything but tough. "What was old Gus up to this afternoon?" he asked. "He never got back until sundown." "The same thing you was just up to?" Lorena said. Jake lifted his eyebrows, not really surprised. "I knowed it. That scamp," he said, "left me to work so he could come and pester you." Lorena decided to tell it. That would be better than if he found out from somebody else. Besides, though she considered herself his sweetheart, she didn't consider him her master. He had not really mastered anything except poking, though he had improved her card game a little. "Gus offered me $50, she said. Jake lifted his eyebrows again in his tired way, as if there was nothing he could possibly be told that would really surprise him. It angered her a little, his acting as if he knew everything in advance. "He's a fool with his money," Jake said. "I turned him down," Lorena said. "I told him I was with you." Jake's eyes came alive for a moment, and he gave her a smart slap on the cheek, so quick she scarcely saw it coming. Though it stung her cheek, there was no real anger in it. It was nothing to some of the licks she had taken from Tinkersley. Jake hit her once, as if that was a rule in the game they were playing, and then the life went out of his eyes again, and he looked at her with only a tired curiosity. "I reckon he got his poke," he said. "If he didn't, you can hit me a lick." "We cut the cards for it, and he cheated," Lorena said. "I can't prove it, but I know it. He gave me the $50 anyway." "I ought to told you never to cut the cards with that old cud," Jake said. "Not unless you're ready for what he's ready for. He's the best card cheat I ever met. He don't cheat often, but when he does, you ain't gonna catch him." He wiped some of the mud off her belly. "Now that you're rich, you can loan me 20, he said. "Why should I?" Lorena said. "You didn't earn it. You didn't stop it." Besides, he had money from his own card playing. If she knew anything, it was not to give a man money. That was nothing more than an invitation to get sold with their help. Jake looked amused. "Keep it, then," he said. "But if it had been any other man than Gus, I would have shot you." "If you'd known," she said, getting up. Jake stood looking out the window while she stripped the bed. He sipped his whiskey, but didn't mention the trail again. "Are you going with the herd?" she asked. "Ain't decided," he said. "They'll be here till Monday." "I plan to leave when you leave," she said. "With the herd or not?" Jake looked around. She was standing in her shift, a little red spot on one cheek where he had slapped her. A lick that made no impression on her at all. It seemed to him there was never much time with women. Before you could look at one twice, you were into an argument, and they were telling you what was going to happen. "You'd look a sight in a cow camp," he said. "All them darn cowboys are in love with you anyway. I'd have to kill half of them before we got to the Red River if you go along." "They won't bother me," she said. "Gus is the only one with the guts to try it." Jake chuckled. "Yes, he'd want to cut the cards twice a day," he said. It seemed to him harder as he got older to find a simple way of life. On the one hand, there were his friends who expected something of him. On the other, there was Lori, who expected something else. He himself had no fixed ideas about what to do, though he thought it would be pleasant to live in a warm town where he could find a card game. Having a pretty woman to stay with made life happier, of course, but not if it meant having to take the woman to San Francisco. Of course he could run. He wasn't chained to the bedpost or to the friends either. There was Mexico right out the window. But what would that get him? Mexico was even more violent than Texas. Mexicans were always hanging Texans to make up for all the Mexicans Texans hung. If hanging was all he had to look forward to, he'd rather take his in Arkansas. Lori was watching him with a strange heat in her eyes. It wasn't because he had slapped her, either. He felt she was reading his mind. Somehow most women could read his mind. He had only really outmaneuvered one, a little red-headed whore in Cheyenne, who was all heart and no brain. Lorena wasn't going to be fooled. Her look put him on the defensive. Most men would have beat her black and blue for what she had done that afternoon, and yet she hadn't even made an attempt to conceal it. She played by her own rules. It struck him that she might be the one to kill the sheriff from Arkansas if it came to that. She wouldn't balk at it if he could keep her wanting him. "You don't need to stand there looking out of sorts," he said. "I won't run off without you." "I ain't out of sorts," she said. "You are. You don't want to stay, and you don't want to go." Jake looked at her mildly. "I've been up that way," he said. "It's rough. Why don't we go up to San Antonio and gamble for a spell?" "Tankersley took me there," Lorena said. "I don't want to go back." "You're a hard one to please," Jake said, getting a little testy suddenly. "I ain't," Lorena said. "You please me fine. I just want to go to San Francisco like you promised." "Well, if you don't like San Antone, there's Austin or Fort Worth," Jake said. "There's lots of nice towns that ain't as hard to get to as San Francisco." "I don't care if it's hard," Lorena said. "Let's just go." Jake sighed and offered her more whiskey. "Lay back down," he said. "I'll rub you back." "I don't need my back rubbed," she said. "Lori, we can't leave tonight," he said. "I was just offering to be friendly." She had not meant to press him so, but a decision had become important to her. She had spent too many nights in the little hot room they were in. Taking the gritty sheets off the bed made her realize it. She had changed them many times because the men she lay under were as gritty as Jake had been. It was something that had repeated itself once too often, and she was done with it. She wanted to throw the sheets, and maybe the mattress and the bed, too, out the window. She was through with the room and everything that went with it, and Jake Spoon might as well know it. Honey, you look like you caught a fever, Jake said, not realizing it was a fever of impatience to be done with Lonesome Dove and everything in it. If you're set on it, I reckon we'll go, but I don't fancy living in no cow camp. Call wouldn't have it anyway. We can ride with them during the day and make our own camp. Lorena was satisfied. Where they camped made no difference to her. Then Jake started talking about Denver and how when they got there it would be easy to make their way across to San Francisco. She only half listened. Jake washed off the best he could in the little wash basin. She had only one spare sheet, so she put it on the bed while he was washing. "Let's leave tomorrow," she said. "But the herd don't leave till Monday," he reminded her. "It ain't our herd," she said. "We don't have to wait for it." There was something different about her. Jake had to admit, she had a beautiful face, a beautiful body, but also a distance in her such as he had never met in a woman. Certain mountains were that way, like the Bighorns. The air around them was so clear you could ride toward them for days without seeming to get any closer. And yet, if you kept riding, you would get to the mountains. He was not so sure he would ever get to Lori. Even when she took him, there was a distance between them. And yet, she would not let him leave. When they blew out the lamp, a shaft of moonlight came in the window and cut across their bodies. Lori let him rub her back, since he enjoyed doing it. She was not sleepy. In her mind, she had already left Lonesome Dove. She was simply waiting for the night to end so they could really leave. Jake got tired of the back rub and tried to roll her over for another poke, but she wouldn't have it. She pushed his carrot away, a response he didn't like at all. "Now, what's the matter now?" he asked. Lori didn't answer. There was nothing to say. He made a second try, and she pushed it away again. She knew he hated to be denied, but didn't care. He would have to wait. Listening to his heavy, frustrated breathing, she thought for a while that he might be going to make a fight over it, but he didn't. His feelings were hurt, but pretty soon he yawned. He kept twisting and turning, hoping she would relent. From time to time, he nudged her hip as if by accident. But he had worked all day, and he was tired. Soon he slept. Lori lay awake, looking out the window, waiting for it to be time to leave. Jake awoke not long after dawn to find Lorena up before him. She sat at the foot of the bed, her face calm, watching the first red light stretch over the mesquite flats. He would have liked to have slept, to hide and sleep for several days, make no decisions, work no cattle, just drowse. But not even sleep was really under his control. The thought that he had to get up and leave town, with Lori, was in the front of his mind, and it melted his drowsiness. For a minute or two, he luxuriated in the fact that he was sleeping on a mattress. It might be a poor one, stuffed with corn shucks, but it was better than he would get for the next several months. For months, it would just be the ground, with whatever weather they happened to catch. He looked at Lori for a minute, thinking that perhaps if he scared her with Indian stories, she would change her mind. But when he raised up on one elbow and took a look at her in the fresh light, the urge to discourage her went away. It was a weakness, but he could not bear to disappoint women, even if it was ultimately for their own good. At least he couldn't disappoint them to their faces. Leaving them was his only way out, and he knew he wasn't ready to leave Lori. Her beauty blew the sleep right out of his brain, and all she was doing was looking out a window, her long golden hair spilling over her shoulders. She wore an old threadbare cotton shift that should have been thrown away long ago. She didn't own a decent dress, and had nothing to show her beauty to advantage, yet most of the men on the border would ride 30 miles just to sit in a saloon and look at her. She had the quality of not yet having really started her life. Her face had a freshness unusual in a woman who had been sporting for a while. The thought struck him that the two of them might do well in San Francisco, if they could just get there. There were men of wealth there, and Lori's beauty would soon attract them. "You don't look like you've changed your mind," he said. "I guess I gotta get up and go buy you a horse." "Take my money," she said.
Don't get one that's too tall. She gave him Gus's $50. Hell, I don't need all this, he said. Ain't a horse in town worth $50 unless it's that mare calls and she ain't for sale. But he took the money, thinking it a fine joke on Gus that the money from his poke would buy Lori a mount to ride to Montana, or however far they went. He had known perfectly well Gus would try something of the sort, for Gus would never let him have a woman to himself. Gus liked to be a rival more than anything else, Jake figured. And as for Lori going through with it, well, it relieved him of a certain level of responsibility for her. If she was going to keep that much independence, so would he. Lorena kept looking out the window. It was as if her mind had already left Lonesome Dove and moved up the trail. Jake sat up, put his arms around her. He loved the way she smelled in the mornings. He liked to sniff at her shoulders or her throat. He did it again. She didn't reject these little morning attentions, but she didn't encourage them either. She waited for him to leave and go by the horse, running over in her mind a few things she could take with her. There was not much. Her favorite thing was a mother-of-pearl comb Tinkersley had bought her when they first got to San Antonio. She had a thin gold ring that had been her mother's, and one or two other trifles. She had never liked to buy things. In Lonesome Dove, it didn't matter, for there was nothing much to buy. Jake sat and scratched himself for a while, smelling Lori's flesh and hoping she would encourage him. But since she didn't, he finally got dressed and went off to see about horses and equipment. Before Jake had been gone 10 minutes, Lorena got a surprise. There was a timid knock at her door. She opened it a peek, and there was Xavier Wan standing on the stairs in tears. He just stood there, looking as if it was the end of the world, tears running down his cheeks and dripping onto his shirt. She didn't know what to make of it, but since she wasn't dressed, she didn't want to let him in. "Is it true, what Jake says?" he asked. "Are you leaving today?" Lorena nodded. "We're going to San Francisco," she said. "I want to marry you. Do not go. If you go, I don't want to live. I will burn the place down. It's a filthy place anyway. I will burn it tomorrow." "Well, it's your place," she thought. "Burn it if you want to." But she didn't say it. He had given her a job when she didn't have a penny, and had paid promptly for whatever services he required. Now he was standing on the stair, so wrought up he could hardly see. "I'm going," she said. "But Jake is not true," he said. "I know him. He will leave you somewhere. You will never get to San Francisco." "I'll get there," Lorena said. "If Jake don't stay, I'll get there with someone else." He shook his head. "You will die somewhere," he said. "He'll take you the wrong way. We could marry. I will sell this place. We can go to Galveston and take a boat for California. We can get a restaurant there. I have Teresa's money. We can get a clean restaurant with tablecloths. You won't have to see men anymore." "Except I'd have to see you," she thought. "Let me come in," he said. "I will give you anything, more than Gus." She shook her head. "Jake would kill you," she said. "Now you go on now." "I can't," he said, still crying. "I am dying for you. If he kills me, I would be better. I will give you anything." Again she shook her head, not quite sure what to think. "You should marry me," he said. "I will be good to you. I am not like these men. I have manners. You would see how kind I would be. I would never leave you. You could have an easy life." Lorena just kept shaking her head. The most interesting thing he had said was about the boat. She didn't know much, but she knew Galveston was closer than Denver. Why was Jake wanting to ride to Denver if they could take a boat? "You better leave," she said. "I don't want Jake to catch you up here. He might shoot you." "No, I will shoot him. I have a shotgun. I will shoot him when he comes back if you don't let me in." Lorena hardly knew what to think. It was crazy behavior. He did own a shotgun. It was not likely Jake would let someone shoot him. He already had his Arkansas trouble for shooting someone. They might not get to leave if there was a shooting. Xavier began to pull money out of his pocket. It was hard to say how much he held out to her, but it was a good